October 19th, 1973.
The Who deliver what their fans had been wanting for years. A rock opera follow-up to Tommy. It came in the form of a double album that became their most successful effort to date. Quadrophenia. From the autumn of 1970 until the autumn of 1973, when The Who actually began recording Quadrophenia, Pete Townshend worked on numerous projects. A solo record, Thunderclap Newman's album, Eric Clapton's Rainbow Concert, and movie soundtracks, while at the same time writing music for and developing the storyline to what became Quadrophenia. Here's Pete's memories of the recording sessions.
What I remember was, you know, yes, we had a good time and, you know, Keith Moon showed up with a different girl and a different Rolls Royce every day. But when you asked him to go 1, 2, 3, 4 and play the drums, he did a great job. I mean, his drumming on that album is spectacular. It's not just expressive and grand and Keith Moon pompous and silly, you know, too many drums. It's also what marked Mooney out was that he listened. So what he did may have been decorative sometimes. It wasn't always fundamental to the track, but it always fitted.
Dr. Jimmy and Mr. Jim, when I build you don't notice him. He only comes out when I dig my gym.
John Entwistle was at the height of his powers, I think, before he got into, you know, the very open kind of, maybe again, too many notes kind of sound that followed. Fundamental, incredibly powerful, loquacious bass playing. You know, John Entwistle's brass work on Quadrophenia was quite extraordinary. I mean, some of the tracks have got 20 or 30 overdubbed brass on it. Roger's singing is just off the map. I mean, he was just a giant on that record. Love Rain or Me, the way I sang it on the demo, was a little kind of wimpy love song, you know, a song to the clouds, you know. Roger bawled it, yelled it, it came right from his gut upwards, you know, made it a song of passion. And my writing, I think, it's never been better. So, you know, I remember it very, very fondly, but it was brief.
And so do Who fans. It's with deep affection for Quadrophenia that Pete Townshend set about working on the director's cut of the rock opera. As of November 15th, the fruits of his passion are out. The original music remastered with an additional surround sound mix, as Pete had always intended, plus his demos of the songs, and a bunch of others that did not make it into the album. Finally, a 10,000-word fantastic essay by Pete, illustrating that out of chaos can come brilliance. Hi, I'm Dan Neer. Over the next hour, Pete Townshend, Roger Daltrey, and John Entwistle will guide you through as much as we can cram in of Quadrophenia, the director's cut.
Can you see the real me? Can you? Can you?
The Real Me, newly remastered for Quadrophenia, the director's cut. John Entwistle.
It was a little ahead of its time. I'd say about 4 or 5 years ahead of its time. People were just surprised to hear something like that. You know, when I played some of the best bass I've ever played on the thing, so I was really happy with it. But The Real Me was like take number one, and I was taking the mickey out of the song. You know, I was just playing whatever I wanted to play. And we kept coming back to it. You know, we did a few more takes, we kept coming back to it, and it ended up as a bass solo with vocals.
Roger Daltrey.
The narrative of Quadrophenia is a very loose thing. I mean, I've always felt that what it's really about is just general adolescence, when you are all these different bits of personality, you're not quite sure which one is the real you, you know. And I think there's a little bit of bellboy in all of us. I think there's a little bit of the front of Ace Face. There's the romantic side that Pete is playing, and there's the kind of storm ahead, take anything on the nose part that I'm playing. And I think when you're adolescent, every adolescent is fighting to understand how all these things fit into one person, which, you know, some of us get and some unfortunately don't.
Pete Townsend.
Anyway, I scribbled out this story, you know, and it was about a boy, a young man who is going through an incredible personal crisis and how that crisis might be seen by somebody's standing outside, like a doctor, a priest, a psychologist, his mother, his father, his boss, his friends, his, you know, potential girlfriend, you know, his heroes and the people in his gang. And then to actually execute that, I mean, it started simply, but as you can see as I talk about it, it's a very rich thing, and I managed to pull it off. But musically, I pulled it off. You know, I gave each facet of Jimmy's character a connection with a member of the band. I gave each facet of Jimmy's character a leitmotif, musically speaking. And then I developed each leitmotif into a song, and at the end I created this piece of music orchestrally in which all the leitmotifs come together and he goes off onto the firmament, as it were, you know, and therefore kind of being a symbolic and impressionistic representation of this boy reconciling the four aspects of his character for the first time ever and feeling a sense of genuine spiritual emptiness rather than being pulled in loads of different directions. And that felt to me like the, you know, the creation of a masterpiece.
The director's cut of Quadrophenia includes Pete's demos of the songs from the album and for songs that didn't make it as well. Here's his demo of Punk, which will blend into the final version on the album, The Punk and the Godfather. Demo Punk and The Punk Meets the Godfather, both from the director's cut of Quadrophenia, from The Who, Pete Townsend.
I always wanted there to be a narrative, and I think I had the story, the basic one-day story, quite early in the process. His bad day that ends up on the rock. I had that scribbled out. So there were quite a lot of songs that represented as demos which didn't make it onto the Who album because they were about a chapter in Jimmy's life that I realised we really didn't need. They were about his childhood, about him having a grandparent who, you know, gave him a mandolin, about him falling in love with a girl, about them having a fantasy together, about their future life. You know, all of this stuff, I just thought this is all pointless. You know, we don't need any of this. We don't need any background.
He kicked me out. You must have heard of them, a kind of screwed up blend. Split personality. Two sides they fight and argue all night over coffee or tea. Well, that's okay, I wouldn't mind two shakes or even three.
One of the never-before-heard demos on the director's cut of Quadrophenia, Quadrophenic, Four Faces. Here's Pete on a song every Who fan knows.
Well, 515 was one of two or three songs that I've written in the street. I wrote Who Are You in the street, and I wrote 515 in the street. A few songs that I've written in the street. Really, it's about anxiety, really. It's about having an anxiety attack on the street. You know, Quadrophenia, all the songs were supposed to be about a young man who feels suddenly and crucially abandoned by everything in his life, everybody and everything and every value. And 515 is about being abandoned in a way by the street. Another example of Roger singing with incredible power about human frailty. The whole of Quadrophenia is like this, the Who machine, at probably its most powerful right the way through the album, and yet the whole album is about frailty. Giving up, breaking down, reaching a rock bottom, isn't it, they call it in recovery circles. You reach a rock bottom, and for Jimmy, the hero of Quadrophenia, it was a rock bottom that was about to lead to a spiritual awakening. And at the very end of the piece, you get a sense that suddenly he is just crying to God to be awakened or blessed or, you know, put right or whatever. And 515 was sort of a track along the way. Why should I care?
with 5:15.
And what I remember was how, despite Keith being off his head, you know, pretending to be a Saudi prince, just how well we played.
That's next, when our behind-the-scenes look at the director's cut of Quadrophenia returns. Thank you for joining our inside look at Quadrophenia, the director's cut. The story of Jimmy and his search to find himself and spirituality is infused with sounds and rich images of the ocean.
It's a kind of oceanic. It's meant to be kind of, you know, trying to evoke the sea and the scope of the sea. And the oceanic idea, the idea of the spiritual potential of the sea, where, you know, what's interesting, you go back to the mod movement and you talk to the, you know, as you get on my scooter, I used to go down to Brighton, you know, we used to end up on the beach and we kind of take a few leapers and we just used to look at the sea, man, you know. And that's where it would end up. And you think, that's what it was about? You go look at the sea, so you're just like the two old ladies that come down on the train with their sandwiches, high deck chairs, and they look at the sea. You're no better, you're no bigger, you're no worse, you're no more fun, you're no less fun, you're just the same. You know, that there's this incredible universal power of the ocean, you know, whether you're in Brighton or the Pacific or, you know, the Maldives or Stockholm, you know, it's there, you know, and this universal power that Jimmy eventually hands himself over to, gets on a boat and goes out to a rock and sits and waits for the tide to come in, you know, and in a way that was what I heard when I listened to Wagner. I felt that, you know, whenever I tried to listen to Wagner, you know, the story, the mythology, the sheer mythic potential of it got in the way. You know, I just wanted to boil it down to, what's this about, you know? Here by the sea and sand, nothing ever goes as planned. I just couldn't face going home. It was just a drag on my own. They finally threw me out. My mom got drunk on stout. My dad couldn't stay.
Sea and Sand from the newly released director's cut of Quadrophenia. Included with the new package is a fascinating 10,000-word essay written by Pete Townsend. The essay features pictures taken by him while he was pursuing a photography hobby during the period, as well as some business letters and lyrics scribbled on notepads. It's a refreshingly honest treatise on the time.
It kind of flowed. I got into it. So, and then what I did is I moved from the liner notes into the studio, and that kind of flowed as well. It was a nice couple of months. I did about a month of preparation, and then a month on the liner notes, and then a month in here doing the demos. I really enjoyed it. It was good. It was good. I used to look forward to coming in here every day. All of the demos for Quadrophenia, my home demos, were done on an 8-track machine, and through this desk, different 8-track machine, but I got this desk back. I sold it to Ronnie Wood and I got it back from him, and this is the desk that I use for most of the demos. So I could get the tapes out, put them on there and play them back just as they were back then. And then I would put them into a computer and then start to cook them up. With 8 tracks, it's quite good to mix what they call in the box on a computer using a computer software. A demo of a song left off Quadrophenia, but now found on the director's cut, Get Inside. Pete Townsend gives us a feel for the actual recording of the album in 1973. The thing that's clear is that we worked very hard over a very intense period, but that's because suddenly we had a deadline. We had our own studio, so there was no pressure, but we knew that we had to finish it before the winter. So there's this sense of working every single day, you know, from July right the way through to September. And it's only 3 months, but it was unbelievably intense. And about in the middle of September, we stop. I've done a stereo mix and we're about to go in and start to do the quadraphonic mix, and it was announced that we were going to start a tour 2 weeks later. So we had no time to rehearse, no time to do the quad mixing, no time even to master the stereo properly. So the first stereo release is pretty clunky sound because it wasn't mastered properly. You know, what comes across when I read the diaries is just, and what I remember was how, despite Keith being off his head, you know, pretending to be a Saudi prince, despite all of the difficulties with our manager and just how well we played. You know, we were in really good shape. And it was probably the last time we ever played as well as that. But we were on top form. And, you know, I did most of the takes with a pint of brandy inside me, so I don't know how I did it, but I think also the adrenaline in the studio was up all the time, you know. I probably got drunk while driving home. No, I didn't drive home because, of course, I used to go to and from the studio in my boat. And why was I in my boat? Because I'd lost my license for driving drunk. That's right, yeah. So I was drunk some of the time, but it was very high energy, fun to be there. It was our studio, so we could, not only could we employ girls on reception who were gorgeous, you know, it seems facile, but you know, if a take was going badly, I just whisper to Ron Nevison, who was my co-producer and engineer. This was his first big job. I'd kind of whisper in my mic and say, get the girls into the control room. And they would come out and they'd kind of dizzy about them, and suddenly everybody would start to go, oh, we're really, you know, we're, and we'd get a good take because there were girls watching.
Drowned, from the director's cut of Quadrophenia. The song was rooted as a lyric in the poetic writing of the Sufi poets Hafiz and Rumi, both of whom were enjoyed by Pete's spiritual master, Maya Baba. The ocean is a symbol of universal unconsciousness. The flowing water represents the individual soul trying to find its way back to infinity. As we said before, one of the ideas behind the making of another rock opera was to replace Tommy as a centerpiece for The Who's live performances. During its creation, Pete came to an important realization.
Remember that when I'd done Tommy, I had indeed written a background for his life. He starts when he's a baby. So we got a sense of his childhood, and I felt I had to do that again with Quadrophenia, but then realised later that I didn't. All I really needed to do was to look at his day and tell you almost nothing about him. And that was around the time that I realised that my method as a songwriter had been writing songs, turnkey songs, for every man. In other words, I write songs and you put yourself, maybe not you, but as the listener, you put yourself into the song. So in Quadrophenia, you have Jimmy, you put yourself into Jimmy. And therefore you then enjoy his role, but you find your own story and emotional response to it in it. Then I suddenly thought, actually, I didn't invent this. This is what pop music at its best does. And not only that, what the best pop performers do. You know, the best pop performers allow you to kind of be them. Sally was a step collector.
A demo of a song that didn't make the original album, but is now found on the director's cut of Quadrophenia, Joker James.
Love Rain on Me takes you back to basics. You know, love is like rain that falls, you know, when you're sitting on the beach. It's the embrace of nature, you know. And this is Jimmy's first induction into the language of love. He's got it all wrong, you know. He thinks that just by sort of looking into the window of the girl that he fancies, somehow she's going to come out and kind of go, you want a date, mate? You know, he'll go, oh yeah, you know, and it's all going to come. You know, he doesn't do anything. He just longs. He doesn't even live in fantasy. He doesn't even allow himself fantasy. He just longs, you know.
Only love can make it rain. Kissed by the sea. Only love can make it rain, like the sweat of lovers laying in the fields.
Emotional, inspired music from The Who. Love, Rain or Me from the newly remastered Quadrophenia, the director's cut. There is so much more that you can learn by reading the 10,000-word essay that Pete wrote included with this release. But what most Who fans probably want to know is, will the band be touring anytime soon?
Probably all the rumors are coming from May. You know, I've really wanted to do this concert since we did it at the Royal Albert Hall last year. I've wanted to do it as a tour. We had an opportunity to do it last autumn. Roger had some reservations. He was also starting work with this new band of his. And then we had an opportunity to do it this autumn. And again, he's gone out with his own band. So now we're talking about next autumn. And I'm hoping that I can persuade him to do it. It's strange, the shoe is on the other foot. It always used to be Roger trying to persuade me to do tours. And I'm really happy that he's got this band of his and that he's enjoying it, because he's doing a Tommy tour. And, you know, it gives me time to write my book and do the work that I did on the package. But I so enjoyed being on stage at the Royal Albert Hall, you know, in my suit, with my glasses on, playing guitar for Quadrophenia with quite a big band. And what actually happened was, as I walked off, I thought, that's it, that's where I should be today, you know, with Quadrophenia. You know, I felt a bit Roger Waters on the Wall. I thought, you know, we'll take this around the world and we'll be, as Daffy Duck said once, you know, we'll be unbelievably, incredibly, indescribably rich. And Roger kind of went, oh, I don't know, man, I didn't feel right. And I said, what? He said, didn't feel right. There's something wrong. I can fix it though, he said. You know, so we're kind of waiting for him to fix it. I'm pretty sure that we will do it next winter, but probably only in America to start with.
How can I explain how I feel? I'm like a little kid running at the heel. She's giving me looks like she thinks I'm a snappy dresser. How can I tell what I should plan? Never kissed a girl or held her hand. She's waiting for me to move.
Another orphan demo we close tonight, now at home on Quadrophenia, the director's cut. Now before we close, one last quadrophrenic quote from Pete.
Quadrophenia was meant to be the first rock album dedicated to quad sound after Dark Side of the Moon. Dark Side of the Moon was recorded in quad as well, and that was out in stereo. And they also had a quadrophonic PA system for live gigs, so with sound coming out of the bag. But Quadrophenia was meant to be a bit of an advance on that, in that all of the leitmotifs that related to the different themes, the different musical themes that related to Jimmy's facets, would come out of different speakers. And at the end, at the moment when he finds himself, they would all come together in the middle in a big explosion. So yeah, it was lovely to hear the surround start to go in that direction. And you know, what actually happened is that not only did I not get the chance to mix it, but lucky I didn't, because quadraphonic sound, as it was then, on vinyl discs, it stuttered and it failed. It never happened. You know, it's the film industry that has saved surround sound.
This behind-the-scenes look at the director's cut of Quadrophenia by The Who was produced in New York and New Jersey by Near Perfect Productions for Universal Music. Special thanks to Robert Rosenberg and Bill Kirbishley from Trinifold Management Limited, and to Elliot Kendall and Rob Jacobs from Universal Music. I'm Dan Neer. Thanks for listening.